Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Well, hey, friends. Hope everybody's doing well. Boy, I tell you what, the weather's been really hot in Denver. And it's made up for a lot of changes in the way that we're doing things. And so as we get ready for the holidays that are coming up, the, you know, Father's Day, 4th of July, and things like that, it's time to start thinking about how we're going to protect our people that have a diagnosis and maybe are not cognitively aware of the change in the weather and how extreme it can be, going outside to having it be unbelievably windy, to having the heat be so really scorching hot. And in Colorado, for sure, we could be outside for 10 minutes and start to burn. At 20 minutes, you're going to have some color on you. So what kind of things can we think about for the holidays? You know, it's kind of a crazy deal, but as we get closer to, you know, birthdays and like I said, special events, weddings, anniversaries, things that happen during the summertime, we have to think about what are we doing to keep our loved ones safe. So first thing, they're not probably going to remember to put on sunscreen. Let's start there. Make sure you always have sunscreen in your bag. Make sure that you help them to put it on before they go out. Make sure they have a hat on so that their face isn't getting burned. Make sure that they have layered clothing so that if they get too hot, they can take off an extra jacket or, you know, have a short sleeve shirt on underneath. All these things are going to help you enormously if you're outside. Something else you need to do is make sure you have plenty of hydration. Make sure you're carrying lots of water with you. Try to stay away from drinks that are sugary. That is not helpful in the summertime. That helps raise your body temperature up. It makes people more excited, more anxious. It makes them hot. We know that you just watch a two-year-old with a sugar high, and I proved my point already. So thinking about things like that, what can you do to make sure that they're wearing appropriate clothing? I would even try to stay away, per se, from shorts. If you have somebody outside for a long time, have them wearing pants, because if they sit down on a park bench, if they're sitting on the back porch, their legs could get burned. So certainly make sure that you're thinking about those kinds of things. And make sure they're cotton, too, or something that's really light, not something that's heavy that's going to make them sweat. Because if they do, you know, sometimes depending on the stages they're in, they'll just peel their clothes off, and that could be a serious problem. So some other things to think about. When you get in and out of the car, bring like a bandana, bring a towel or something. If you have leather seats, make sure that you cover the seats with a towel, because there's nothing worse than getting into a car when it's 100 degrees, 90 degrees, and it's super hot. When I came into the studio today, I made sure to take one of the bandanas that I had brought to actually put over my face, and I spread it across the driver's seat because I always back into my parking space and the sun comes down and hits it. If you're a person with Alzheimer's, Lewy body, any type of memory loss, those kinds of things, you might just get into a car, sit down, and they'll burn their legs. So we have to think about these things. Maybe even cover your steering wheel, cover the dashboard. So if they were to touch the dashboard, if they get freaked out when you hit the brakes or something, they don't burn their hands. other things that you could use in terms of the car, as their spatial orientation deteriorates, people with Alzheimer's will struggle to get in and out of a car that has a black floorboard or a black seat. So it's a good idea anyway just to put a towel that is white on the floorboard and on the seat so that when they get in, it's comfortable, it's not hot, and they can actually see it. Black is a color that most people that have the back of their brain, the occipital lobe malfunctioning, they will think it's a hole and they won't want to step in it. So these are some things that you can really think about if you're struggling to get your partner, your friend, whoever it is, into the car. And as we're driving, if you have windows down, you're going to find that your person with the diagnosis may struggle with the movement of the speed of the car. So they may think that a bicycle rolling up right next to them is somebody that's going to hit them. They may think that the trees that are going by and the shadows created on the road are some kind of a bad warning. They could think it's like tornado-ish. They could see the movement and have it really mess with their brain in terms of, you know, the road itself isn't moving, but they think it is. If they freak out while you're driving, I want you to think about pulling over in a church parking lot under a shady tree. Just sit there for a few minutes. Take a minute to rest. If you can, get out of the car, walk around a little bit, you know, get the shade on you. Try not to drive around in a car that doesn't have any air conditioning, because rolling the windows down, I can guarantee you, aren't going to be helpful for a person with Alzheimer's. There's too much stimulation. They'll hear sirens. They'll hear other cars and may begin to panic and not be good passengers to ride with. And that could be an extreme struggle. So make sure you have a little bit of extra food in the car, some snacks, maybe some apple bites or some raisins, whatever that person's favorite food or snack is. Definitely not chocolate. With all the heat, it's going to melt in the car. But try to bring some extra food, snacks, drinks. Even keep maybe a cooler in the back of your car and put some ice in it and have bottled water in there, so that anytime you're on a road trip, if there's any stress, if there's any anxiety, you have some ways to combat that. I would also recommend that maybe you have something in the car that they could write on or color with, or the adult coloring books, things like that. Maybe have a stuffed animal that can ease any anxiety from a tactile standpoint, so they could hold it in their hands and feel comfortable and feel like maybe whatever it is that is staggering them and having them have a difficult time with the ride can have more of a comforting tactile feel for their fingers and things like that. So, boy, going for road trips is difficult when you have a person with Alzheimer's. So just make sure that you take plenty of stops, that if you are going, say, to a national park or you're going on a camping trip or something, make sure you stop about every hour and have a little bit of quiet time, a little respite time. Just pull over on the road, let them have the stimulation drain from their body. I think it would be really terrific if you could use breathing techniques or balancing sort of yoga moves and things like that to help them move their body and get some great exercise while you're sitting there, you know, sort of stuck on the road for a few minutes. But sort of like Tai Chi movements or breathing exercises, just walking around, marching like you're picking up your knees when you're moving, just so that they can stretch out and really let their body relax, but make sure that they're using enough of their muscle that they won't be kind of stuck or feeling like they're maybe stiff and not feeling well from too long of a ride in a car. Those are things you really have to think about. And if you're going on those trips, I certainly would like you to take some puzzles, some audiobooks, cards, simple games. You could take something like Operation. You could take kids' games. You could take Lincoln Logs. You can take checkers. Take different games that would help you with engagement if they were to get bored. And certainly have plenty of music that is of their genre, music that they like. And on those stops that you have to make, it might be a good time if you're in an RV or something like that, that you just get up and dance a little bit. Just make sure that you utilize all these different thought processes to keep everything from being overstimulated or understimulated, or anybody not feeling well, car sickness, and things like that. So how about gatherings? Say you're going to your family's home, and we're in this COVID mess, and now we have to wear masks. We're trying to use social distancing. You want to explain that we cannot just go up and hug somebody. You want to explain that we have to stay 3 to 6 feet apart, but that's difficult for a person with Alzheimer's. I would think that if you take them along, it would be better than leaving them at home. I talk to people all the time who have the diagnosis, and they feel like with this whole COVID thing, they're going absolutely stir crazy. They can't go anywhere. They can't do anything. And it's really taxing on their emotional well-being. So I think if you can take them, you're really going to have to either share the care with someone or stay right by their side. So that they don't just get up and go over and hug someone or sit too close to someone, but also making sure that they can enjoy whatever the festivity is, and letting them get up and make their own plate if you have food there, but somebody walking with them and staying with them, and if you have to have a mask on, try to get them the lightest possible one that you can. Bandanas, in this case, don't work well. They're heavy. They have too many folds. It's a beautiful idea, whoever thought about it and put it on YouTube. But bandanas are super hot. So try to come up with something that is one layer that is comfortable for them to wear. And even see if you can find a cute one that has like a face on it or something. They have all these different fun masks that I've seen that have been created of late. But see if you can find some that are super lightweight so they're not inclined to per se mess with them or try to take them off too many times. And so, you know, I know this is difficult. And as we're starting to reopen restaurants and we're starting to reopen gyms and, you know, even the sports teams are coming back and things like that, there's still a lot of trepidation. There's still a lot of worry about going out into public. And so just make sure that if you are taking them out somewhere, that hopefully you can sit in an outside area, like a back porch area, a yard, again, using that sunscreen, the hats and things like that, umbrellas, whatever you need to keep them shaded. But try to make sure you're in a more open air environment so that they don't get too close to someone and make someone else uncomfortable. These are just really, really important things to think about. So back to those parties. What if it's their birthday and people are bringing gifts? People are sending gifts. My advice to you, even if you are mailing a gift to someone and you put it in a box, put that gift in a bag that opens from the top that you could maybe put tissue paper in, because it is very difficult for a person with Alzheimer's to untie bows and take off wrapping paper. It's just too hard. It's just too much. So let's think through this. How would we just get this in a bag where we could throw tissue paper in it and something that they don't have to open? And if it's in a box, whatever you're buying is in a box and it is attached. Like as an example, if you buy a Barbie doll for your grandchild or something like that, they typically have like the little ties and things on the back so that people can't steal them. So make sure you open the object, get it out of the casing of whatever box it's been in, and make it easily accessible for them. If you need to leave the instructions or you need to leave whatever it is, just don't leave it in the box that it came in. I had a guest last week who was talking about Alexa being helpful for people with Alzheimer's. So thinking about maybe gifts that you could give someone, I thought that was just an absolutely wonderful idea. Alexa, Siri, those type of apps, those type of computer programs are absolutely fabulous for people with memory loss. And my guest, Deb Job, had told me that it was really helpful for her to have her and her husband set messages in this Alexa to be able to say, hey, it's time for lunch, or put the laundry in the washer. Now take the laundry out of the washer and put it in the dryer. You could use that for a multitude of things. You could use it for alerts for eating, alerts for taking a shower, alerts for working on a puzzle, alerts for listening to an audiobook, alerts for working on your art project, an alert for going for a walk, feeding your dog or cat. I just think that that is a staggeringly fantastic idea. I love that. So think about, for your person that has the diagnosis, those could be absolutely terrific, terrific gifts. I saw one on TV recently where a family had left grandma and they had driven home or flew home, whatever it was, and they had bought her one of these apps that she could actually see them. So when they called her, the app showed them their picture. And so they could actually see her, which was super cool. I can't recall what that was, but I'd certainly like you to Google it and see what kind of apps you can use that you can visually see someone, that it has a video AI or whatever it is, artificial intelligence, so that you can make sure that you're just giving them something that truly is beneficial to them, that someone can help them pre-program. Because, again, it's difficult for somebody with Alzheimer's to learn something new. So if they have to set up that system on their own, they're probably not going to be successful. So think about those kinds of things. Who can help with those? Certainly think about things like for birthdays. Instead of maybe getting together this year, could you do a Zoom call? Could you do a Skype call? Zoom you can use for 30 days for free. Skype is free. You could certainly use an iPhone and do the face-to-face calls, which I think is absolutely beautiful. Don't forget our friends this time of year while we have this COVID. Make sure you're communicating with them. Make sure they can see your face. Make sure that they can hear your voice and that you're thinking on behalf of them very compassionately, that they probably feel completely isolated. They feel a little bit sad. They're struggling being on their own, and these kinds of video communications can be so meaningful to these folks, just absolutely crazy meaningful. So think about those as gifts. Think about those in place of face-to-face meetings that are real, where people can actually sit in the same room and contact each other, and just see what you can do to make sure that if you can't be in the same place, you can make it almost seem as real. I think that would be just incredible. So, yeah, you know, those are the kind of things, you know, as we're coming through June and July and August and September, and we're trying to navigate how we can do these get-togethers. Now it's not going to be as easy just to go to a restaurant and everybody sit down and things be like they used to be. Now you might have to sit outside. Now you might have to sit 3 feet away. So, you know, those kinds of things are tough. So if you're planning a get-together, can you help a local restaurant that maybe has been suffering during this COVID and they're only doing takeout, and order your favorite Mexican food for your little get-together party that you're having and whatever it is? So these restaurants need us. I'm telling you, I'm seeing them every day on Good Morning America saying that they only have due to the state regulations left and right and in various areas, that they can only have 25% of their people or of their restaurant filled. And restaurants need to have at least 60% just to break even. So if you can help them by buying their takeout food and letting the ownership know how much you appreciate them, have your favorite bakeries make cakes where you maybe would have made it yourself. Let's see how we can, spare the love and shed this love left and right to all these businesses that have so needed us. I know in Denver, there's a coffee shop that's kind of an ice cream shop that the lady has two locations. And she was saying on the Tamron Hall show the other day about how she doesn't have as many people coming in her doors and things like that. So utilize these, you know, ice cream places, these bakeries, these restaurants to help put your party together, as opposed to maybe all of you baking something or something. Let's find a way that we can help our other humankind around the world and keep businesses viable and working, and everybody will be much happier in the long run. I know that this darn quarantine and the safer at home and everything has been unbelievably stressful on everybody. And we're so looking forward to the days when we can just get out and go to someone's house or have coffee with a friend or whatever it is. And when that's been missing, I think it's stressing all of us. There's a lot of the COVID virus fatigue going around, and I think that's tough for everybody. So even just walking around your neighborhood, do you still need to keep a mask on? I would say probably yes. There's a lot of people walking on the sidewalks where you live. I know for me, I went on a hike the other day in Chatfield Park with a friend, and we encountered more people than I ever thought I would. And I was glad that we had our mask that we could wear so that we're not spreading this disease to more people when we don't need to be doing that. So again, just think about those family get-togethers, those anniversaries, those birthdays. Is it necessary to get together? If it is, you're going to have to think about how you're going to get the person with Alzheimer's to cooperate with whatever processes you want to put in place, or you're going to put them at risk. So these are things we definitely need to think about. We're going to take a short break, and I'll be right back with some more ideas for you.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
All right, we're back. And I've been talking about, you know, getting out of this COVID virus, getting out of all the restrictions that we've had. And, oh, man, I think it's been super hard for everybody. And I just really feel like we've had a lot of things going on in our country right now that are not per se positive. I guess you could say that people that are protesting and really, you know, coming out in mass in the various cities, this has been going on for the last couple weeks, and this information is on the TV constantly. It's just constant. And I want you to think about making sure that your loved one, your friend, whoever it is that has a cognitive impairment is not tuning in to all this. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's not important for people to have opinions. I'm not saying it's not important that a person with Alzheimer's shouldn't know what's going on in the country and want to be a part of it. But the problem is that they will feed off of our energy. They will feed off of what they see. And right now, I'm telling you, I think that Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, our television sets have nothing but negative energy right now. And I really worry, as we're stuck at home and we're not being able to get out, that our friends with Alzheimer's are going to be seeing all this. The political races are starting to heat up. And I don't think I've ever seen it quite as nasty and vicious as it has been in past years. Short of saying my own opinion on this, I'm going to try not to because I don't want to alienate anybody. But I can certainly say that I think that a lot of what is said out there today may or may not be true, needs a fact checker on it, needs a truth checker. And just watching how people on Facebook take sides and get really animated and super angry, this is no place for your person with Alzheimer's to be. I'm telling you. It is no place for them to be. People, when they have the cloak of anonymity, because nobody can see them, they're just typing on a screen, can be vicious. They can post very unkind words. If you post something that somebody doesn't like, you can get a personal attack. And I do know that some of my clients let and are okay with their people that have diagnosis to be on these social media sites. And I just feel strongly, I cannot say enough, I think this is a bad idea. Left and right, people that don't have cognitive problems, albeit they might be emotionally unstable, they are getting off of Facebook. They'll say, I'm taking a break from Facebook because everybody's being so nasty right now. And we're seeing more and more of this, which could be super confusing for a person that is living with cognitive impairment. They could take a statement that someone says about them and read it and never let go of it. It could ruin their day. It could ruin their week. It could put them in a super bad mood. And you would have absolutely no idea what happened. None. So these are things that we really have to think about. Is it worth the time and the trouble that they are on these sites that, you know, you're going to be dealing with the ramifications and the reverberation of that energy coming back at them and back at you? Is it worth it? So really think about those kinds of things and limit conversations when family members are around or and you're just talking about the events of the day or the riots going on in New York City or these different things that are happening. And think about, you know, there's somebody else sitting in the room that could be affected by it. All right, I've harped on that enough, I guess. But I just want to make sure that you think about those kinds of things. What kind of fun things could you plan for the summer that would be engaging and enjoyable? You know, you could go back to like kids' days where you put a sprinkler in the backyard and you run through the sprinkler. You have a little fun with it. You could set up a badminton set. You could put up a net, play a little badminton, have a little fun with that. I think you could pull out croquet. Croquet is a fun game. It's easy. Most people know it, so it would be a long-term memory. I think they would probably very much enjoy just ways to get outside. Gardening, you know, getting out and weeding and watering your plants and talking to your plants. I do that every single day. Those are things that could be fun. You could pull out your golf clubs and set up something that you could putt into and just go out in your backyard and let the person putt a little bit, and you could putt with them. For that matter, if they were a golfer or something of that nature, golf courses were one of the first things to open. So maybe go to a driving range and hit some balls. I think those kind of things could be fun. If you can get out to a park, maybe take some breadcrumbs with you or something like that and go for a walk around a lake, feed the ducks, possibly have a picnic. You could have a picnic in the park. You could have a picnic in your backyard. Let the person go into the kitchen with you and make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or whatever you want to take. Cut up some apples, take a banana. You know, just plan your meal and go and have a good time. But the games that you can play, again, you could just put a table out back and make sure you've got an umbrella over it. Make sure you've got plenty of water there and play a game of canasta or concentration, solitaire, things like that, card games that are too fun. Maybe your family wants to get out and go camping. I think that's a terrific idea. Try not to think that, well, you know, this person has Alzheimer's, so we can't take them. They're not going to enjoy it. It's going to be difficult. What if we lose them and things like that? Always, always, always try to see what that person can still do, not what they've lost, and engage them in planning the trip. Even if it's just a day trip somewhere, as soon as we have libraries and museums and things like that open again, it will be wonderful to maybe go and pick out a new book or visit the art museum. I know that local zoos are really looking forward to opening again at some point. We often think that zoos are for kids, but people with Alzheimer's absolutely love visiting zoos. So certainly things like that. How about setting up an art station in your house? You could get an easel where you can just use your kitchen table and pull out some watercolors and some paintbrushes and maybe let them have at it a little bit. There are classes that you can take online on YouTube for art. There's certainly things that you could pull up, shows that you can pull up on your television set that someone could learn how to draw. I mean, I'm telling you, they have something for everybody these days. So just think about, you know, what kind of mediums could you use? Could you use the television set? Could you use YouTube? But let them draw. As the disease progresses, it's amazing to me how well people with Alzheimer's can draw. We have something called Memories in the Making that the Alzheimer's Association does every year. And what they do is they have these care communities, these nursing homes. Once a week, they will have people come in and sit down, the residents sit down, and they will have an art instructor who's trained by the association come in and teach them how to draw. And it doesn't matter if they just paint broad strokes or if they actually draw a picture, but they work with them on art. And it's amazing how the right side of the brain still pulls that information and helps people to be able to do things maybe they were never able to do before. And so that Memories in the Making is an absolutely fabulous, fabulous event where they will gather all the art from these people in the residence at these various communities, about 70 of them in the Denver area. And I know they do this all across the country at various locations that they do have an Alzheimer's Association. So, then they take these pictures and they sell them as an art auction to raise money for research. So I think those kinds of things are super cool. In other countries, I don't know if you have things like that. I'm not even sure if the Alzheimer's Association is international. I believe they are, but I'm not sure right now. But you could use things like tablets to draw. There's plenty of games that you can pull online from apps that teach you how to color by number and things like that. So those kinds of things would be absolutely fabulous for you all to try. I've mentioned it on several occasions, but certainly taking time this summer to maybe go outside, sit under a tree, read a book, or journal your thoughts. The disconnect sometimes between the person with the disease and the people that are caring for them gets as wide as a river when they quit talking to each other and their roles change as, you know, maybe being a person who was married to feeling like now they're totally, totally caring and a nurse for their loved one. And the person with the diagnosis is thinking, I don't want to be a burden. So what if you could sit down under a tree and everybody write their thoughts down about the things that they are enjoying in their life and they want to continue doing, the things they miss doing in their lives. If their reading and writing skills are going away, you might have to write them down for them, but that's okay. It's more caring and sharing. But you could talk about the things that are bothering you, people not understanding why you're asking repetitive questions, and the person on the other side saying, why are they asking repetitive questions? Talking about issues of maybe you, you feel like the person is trying to dress you, they're trying to bathe you, and you need some space and can do it yourself, but you don't know how to tell them that, write those things down. Discuss these things with each other. As a care partner, you can say, I feel a little frustrated when I don't know what you want to say. I don't want to always answer questions for you or finish sentences for you, so tell me what you need from me. I think it goes a long, long way if we have to have all this togetherness with this COVID virus that we find ways to communicate what our needs are and to really be able to say, this is what I can do. This is what I can't do. This is what I'm struggling with. This is what I need from you. And please listen to me. Please understand me. Please feel my heart. Feel what my soul is trying to tell you, and see if you can communicate on that level, and then share what each other has written. I think that would be huge, and you don't have to make a great big mountain. You don't have to solve everything in one day, but I certainly think that, you know, as we have this time where we can sit and contemplate and be reflective on our lives, it's a perfect time to enlighten yourself and enlighten everyone around you to what you need. And if you can't do that, then I think that's time for you to get into a support group and talk about how your life is going and what your expectations are and what your disappointments are so that you can get those out and practice good communication with people that it doesn't really matter with. So then you can take it back home and try it on the people that it does matter with. I think support groups are a big deal. I think they're super helpful. And I really hope that you can find a way to communicate your emotional, psychological, and physiological needs, as well as your physical needs. You know, we every year we have a big conference for Parkinson's disease. And one of the things that I love about Parkinson's disease is that they get right down to the nitty-gritty at this conference of things that people need. And one of them that comes up is sex and how it changes when somebody has a diagnosis. You know, we have talked about an array of things here today. I didn't think I was actually going to get into this one, but that's okay. But just really feeling that closeness with your loved one, try as hard as you can. When you've got a diagnosis that comes up and everything's been really tough and distant and confusing and scary, try not to lose that emotional connection. Everybody needs that emotional connection. Everybody needs to feel a hug. They need to feel love. I mean, for goodness sakes, we have so much going on in our world, as I've talked about previously, that the last thing we need in our homes is to have a war ground, right? Our homes need to be peaceful and loving and compassionate and gentle and communicative and enlightening and full of joy if we can find it. You know, look for those moments of joy. Look for the things you can do together. Put some music on and dance. Make sure you get plenty of kisses and hugs. You know, the emotional impact on us at this point in time, I think, is more stressful than it's ever been and lends itself to more distance than it's ever been. Some families have been able to pull it all together and have more togetherness and bake bread and do whatever they need to do. But there's a lot of you that are feeling alone, that are feeling isolated, that you just need that human touch. You need to be able to communicate with somebody. So I want you to think about my guest last week was talking about the Alzheimer's Association has tablets that if you call them, they'll make sure that you can get them so that you can communicate with your family members wherever they are. And, you know, definitely keeping that love and connection with your partner, with your spouse. Don't let the disease take that from you. Really try to keep that strong. Keep it viable. Make sure that you sit down on the couch and put your arms around each other and tangle your legs, whatever you do, and watch a TV show, even if you used to sit in different chairs on different sides of the house. Find ways that you can have that human touch. There's just I am a hugger, and I'm telling you, the struggle is real. I think that that's one of the things that I miss more than anything, is being able to hug someone. So if you've got that access in your house, don't let that slip away. Don't let that go for granted, okay? Don't take it for granted. Just make sure that you keep that love and that connection and that joy in your life, and try not to get buried under not only the disease that you're dealing with, and the symptoms that you're dealing with, but also, you know, just the world banging on our door with all that negative energy. Let's try and stay as positive as we can and loving as we can. And just remember all these different tips, I hope, that have been helpful to you today about how to get through the summer months and how to get through the strangeness of this COVID and the changes that we have with everything in our life. Nothing is the same anymore. We've got to adopt a new normal and adapt to it. And I think it's going to be difficult for everyone. Well, folks, I hope I haven't overwhelmed you and been too scattered today, but I just felt like just talking and having a conversation with you. And again, I would love, love, love your letters, your emails. You can email me at jill@summitresiliencetraining.com. That's SUMMITRESILIENCETraining.com. You can call me between Monday and Friday, 8 to 6 at 303-420-6988. I will pick up the phone and talk to you. Visit my website, summitresiliencetraining.com. And July 1st, I have a new class for the University of Colorado Hospital Neurology Department. I don't care where you are in the world, if you can figure out the time zones. The class is the beginner's class for Alzheimer's. Yesterday, I had part three of the continuum that I have every other month, and I had 40 people on the call. And I had people from all over the United States and two people from Canada. So please jump in. It's July 1st, 1:30 to 3:30 Mountain Time. That would be 3:30 to 5:30 Eastern Time. If that helps you. And so you're welcome to get on the call. I'm going to talk about the brain and how it functions, and when it's not functioning well, what will you see? What kind of symptoms will you see? I teach family members how to be more compassionate and control their emotions. But it's a really good and positive class, and you are welcome to join us. So that's the beginner's class, July 1st, 1:30 to 3:30 Mountain, 3:30 to 5:30 Eastern Time. And all you have to do is go to summitresiliencetraining.com, send me an email saying you want information, and I will send you the Zoom link so you can join us. I really hope you do, because I think it's super helpful. And don't forget, join a support group, whether you have the diagnosis or you're not, And if they're always complaining all the time, find another one. Make sure that you get the help that you need. And you can always rely on me if you need any help. So I'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. And I love you all out there in Caregiver Nation, care partners. Bye.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.